ITS Coffee Break for Tuesday, November 4th, 2008.
On this edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we'll talk about places that are using video games as bait to hook new readers. We'll also talk about the iPhone's competitor to the Kindle. And in help news, we'll show you a few new cool sites to help you find nice web colors.
Welcome to the ITS Coffee Break. My name is Ken Newquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And it's election day. It's election day for us. By the time you hear this, it won't be election day anymore.
Yeah, but it'll be over.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll know who won.
Yes. Which would be a difference from the last, like, two elections,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it would.
But in any case, we have some other election news or post-election news or cool election things that you did.
Well, I mean, I did.
Well, helped with, I should say.
Helped with, yes. So right now, as we speak, the Policy Studies program is setting up for the election night broadcast over in Fairnon.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I was able to work with the students to help them create the pre-recorded segments that'll be shown tonight during the broadcast.
So how does this broadcast work? Can you only see it on campus, or can you see it off campus too?
Well, they're actually using RCN. So basically, if you see Lafayette basketball games, you could see this.
Cool. Well, I might have to check in while I'm channel surfing tonight.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have RCN.
You don't have RCN?
I have Service Electric.
Well, yeah, I have RCN, so I'll be able to check it out.
So check it out. Let me know.
That's a pretty cool project. I mean, we stopped by as we were getting our coffee for the coffee break. And look, everybody seemed really excited.
Yeah, you know, it's really exciting to see something like this come together because it involves all these different classes working on video projects, including like econ classes and engineering policy classes and a math class.
Geology too, right? John Wilson. Well, yep. John Wilson's doing stuff with GIS.
They are doing the maps for the election broadcast. So they have some sort of, you know, pre-constructed maps of things that they want to show, but then they'll also be working on maps on the fly.
Very cool. So yeah, you go over there and there's just, there's the workstation, I guess, or there's the, what would you call it, the place where they're presenting? Why am I drawing a blank on this?
It's like the set.
The set. Okay, so where you've got like your anchors, where you're going to be talking about things, right? And then you have all these different laptop stations set up. It's pretty cool.
And also, Carrie Havranek's journalistic writing class will be watching blogs. They'll be doing a blog watch and sort of reporting in on what's going on in the blogging scene. So
nice. All right, cool. So
hopefully they'll be using Twitter this evening, too, so that we can...
That's true.
They have been using Twitter this semester.
So. Although sometimes for this kind of stuff, I just have to turn off Twitter because people get so riled up, it just kind of flows.
But it's so entertaining.
It can be. I mean, it was really entertaining during the debates.
Yes.
I don't know what it would be like on an election night, because we didn't have election night last presidential. We didn't have Twitter the last election, so I don't know. But I guess we can talk for, this is more of a news thing, but one of the things that I noticed on Twitter that was happening today, and Jason was talking about this, was that people were using it to report voting irregularities.
Yes.
So
there was a whole like hash mark set that people were using for voting today. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just kind of see what things are, what people are doing in real time.
And of course, then people were had mashups going to where you could actually look on a map to see what was going on with it.
That's pretty cool.
It was very cool.
Wow. And if I hadn't been chasing down Firefox Word copy and paste bugs today, I might have noticed that. But in any case, kind of talking about bugs and features and stuff, we just wanted to throw something out there for folks, which is Moodle Collaborative Development. Now, we talked about this a little bit before. We won a grant from Knightley for $43,000 to basically do Moodle Collaborative Development, which basically translates into we're going to work with other colleges to improve Moodle. So we're going to be having our first kind of pilot meeting to talk about this coming up at McAllister College later this month. But we're basically looking for input from the community about what they would like to be able to do. So, sorry, there was a bit of an interruption there. But in any case, what we're looking to do is basically get suggestions on how you think Moodle can be improved. So we're looking for usability improvements. We're looking for bugs that drive you bonkers, things you'd like to see added to Moodle, whatever. We can't necessarily promise that these things are going to get fixed as part of the development grant, but we'd like to get some input. So this is building on what we've done previously with the Hack DocFest, where we've gotten together with a couple of other schools to work on stuff. That's been a little bit more ad lib, you know, just kind of working on it, you know, catch as catch can. Now we're actually coming up with a plan for developing a real module for it or doing a significant usability improvement push. So if you have comments, you can send them to us at itsblog@lafayette.edu. So in technology news this week, actually, I started taking these notes about a month ago. Not a month ago, about 2 weeks ago. We got a little delayed in our podcast. We did have every intention of doing two podcasts in October, but time just got away with us.
Best intentions.
Got away from us. In any case, the first story I wanted to talk about was using video games as bait to hook readers. This was a story in the New York Times that was basically talking about schools and libraries trying to get kids hooked on reading via video games. And there were a couple different tacks on this. So for one, the New York Public Library in New York City was having game nights where they'd have like Smash Brothers or something else to get students into the library. So you'd actually have kids there with the books, which, you know, if they're around books, there's, I guess, the chance that they would want to check one out. So that's just kind of physically getting them in the building and then presumably doing tie-ins with it. Something else that they had done, that they were talking about, was basically authors, as they were writing books, coming up with online hooks, or publishers coming up with online hooks for books. So there was one book that had a scavenger hunt that you could do online, which had a 30-jump scavenger hunt that you just go around to different things and different websites to find stuff. So I thought it was kind of a cool story. I mean, I don't know how successful all of this is going to be. One of the things that they had talked about was how some kids got into reading as a result of playing games and then reading the study guides. Not the study guides, the cheat guides. Mm. So you're playing, I don't know, Fallout 3, and you're trying to figure stuff out. So you go online and you read as much as you can about how to do certain things. And yeah, it's not like picking up a book and reading, but it's still reading.
Right.
So, and then one of the things they quoted a kid who was like, well, you know, I got into it because I was basically doing this reading for this stuff, and that got me thinking. And it was kind of like a little weird because, well, not weird, but the way that they made their jump. So they were playing some a port of a Japanese video game, which led them to read the help files, which then got them into the manga, which is the Japanese comic books. So then they're reading graphic novels because of this video game, which gets them into books. So I think it's interesting. I think one of the things that my personal take on this, and one of the things that they had mentioned in the article, was that as video games become more mature in terms of their storytelling techniques, there's the potential for, I think, more crossover with books. As the narrative gets stronger, you know, you can engage people. And I think BioShock is actually a really good example of this. I don't know, did Kelvin play BioShock?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So BioShock actually is a really good story, and it's basically this capitalist dystopia that was inspired very heavily by Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, right? So if you got into BioShock and you wanted to know more about this philosophy, then you could go and check out the book. Now, it's an absolutely huge book, so it's not likely that very many people would actually go and read it. But I thought it was just interesting that, you know, this book is actually, you know, this game is pulling in on these aspects of the book. And if nothing else, it could encourage you to read more and just learn more about the background to this particular video game. And I think we could see more of that as time goes on. So we also see novel tie-ins to books, to video games. So, for example, Mass Effect had, I think, one or two preview books that were released, or prequel books that were released to support the game. So I could see how you could get people hooked on it. But in any case,
I'm all for gaming that in the library.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we need some Wiis.
But, so talk to your librarians.
And maybe circulating a 360 oh, but wait. That's just because mine died. Anyway.
Well, moving on to something else, sort of book related.
Yeah.
Most of you have heard about the Kindle. I think we've talked about it here. But the Kindle was Amazon's reader that they released last year. And there's been a lot of buzz about the iPhone Stanza program. It's basically a free ebook reader application, and it's been downloaded a whole lot of times.
Yeah, so I guess the hook here is that there have been estimated about 380,000 copies of the Kindle that have been sold, the software or the hardware application Kindle. There have been 395 downloads of Stanza onto iPhones and iPod Touches. So basically they're saying, hey, wow, this little standalone program has actually exceeded the number of Kindles that Amazon has sold. So what does this mean? Well, I think it means that a lot of people were checking out this really cool little app they could have for their iPod Touch, but I don't think a large number of those people are actually going to read books on it.
Right.
Because personally, I downloaded it onto the iPod Touch and I tried it, and it's just not a good format for reading books.
But it would be nice. I mean, I do like to have random things on my iPhone.
This is true.
And it would be nice to have the random book or, you know. Yeah. I think the interesting thing, too, about the Stanza program is that people are able to save their own files as Stanza files and then read those. And so I think that there's more sort of opportunity for involvement with something like this rather than a proprietary type of system.
And I could see it reading like a short story anthology. Right. Or like a short story webzine or something like that, where people made their stuff available for download, and then you could read it on this. Because honestly, I mean, the thing is that, you know, I don't think you're going to want to read War and Peace on the iPod Touch. It's just, I think that the advantage that the Kindle has is the form factor. It's really designed around the size of a paperback.
Right.
But in any case, I mean, it was interesting to try it out. It worked okay. You were able to turn pages. It's not the most user-friendly thing in the world, but, you know, it's getting there. So if you have an iPod or an iPod Touch, check it out. Now, the last thing we want to talk about is a study that CNN recently talked about called Google Does a Brain Good. And what they basically did was they took a couple of people, I think there were like 24 people in their study group, who were in their late 50s to early 60s, and they looked at how their brains worked when they were searching. And basically, the people who were technologically adept, who were used to searching on Google, used their activated areas of their brain far in excess of those who were not normally adept with Google. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Ken's had too much coffee today, so. but yeah, so it was kind of, basically the gist of this was that by using Google, you're using your brain in different ways, which is exercising your brain, which as you get older could help you, you know, fend off dementia, Alzheimer's, basically keep your brain working as at like a peak machine. So, interesting read.
So Google on.
Google on, that's right. And I guess there was nothing in there about how, you know, when you become so immersed in Google that you go into the grocery store and expect to be able to do searches. I want to be able to go into the grocery store with my iPod Touch and just do a search and figure out where the cereal is.
Especially, on the cereal aisle.
Well, yeah, you know what? It's never that simple, though, okay?
I know, my wife
likes to have certain particular things, and finding that one thing is a pain. And it's not the one of, well, you go and talk to somebody about it, and they say, oh, yeah, it's right over there. Because they have no idea what she's looking for either. But that's what happens when you get, like, the hypoallergenic, organic, whatever.
Gluten-free
wheat germ. So in help news this week, our colleague Jason Alley found a really cool web app.
It is indeed very cool. It's called, like, I guess it's supposed to be Color, but it's spelled K-U-L-E-R.
I want to call it Crueler, but obviously it's not.
Yeah, it's not. So it's color.adobe.com, and it basically is like an interactive color palette picking system. But the cool thing about it is that users submit the color palettes and you can tag them and vote on them, and
it's really cool. So it's basically presenting a whole bunch of like complementary color palettes, right? So if you're one of those people who's just like, oh, I really like this color red, but what goes with it, this will tell you exactly what goes with it. And there's just all these different palettes. So if you like one, you can vote on it, you can rate it, you can comment it. You can see the most popular ones, you can see the most used ones. It's just really cool idea, I think. Kudos to Adobe for a really nifty application. And then you can go in, you can see all the actual color values for those things. So, I mean, I could see this obviously for doing web design when you're trying to pick the colors for a website. But even just, you know, colors around your house, right? You know, when my wife and I had to repaint our downstairs, this thing would have been really handy when we were like, oh, well, you know, the sofa's this color. What color do you think would go?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I like it. It's pretty nifty. And Jason's been spending an inordinate amount of time looking at colors because of a library site redesign. So I know that's why he came across this thing, but very cool.
Absolutely. Well, as far as upcoming events for help, Ken is actually leading a brown bag on Monday, November the 24th from 12 to 1. And it's about how to have a scam-free holiday season.
Yep. And actually, the ITS Security Working Group, I think, will be contributing as well. And hopefully we'll be there. We're going to be meeting about it later this week. But the whole idea was that there's an awful lot of scams that float around during the holiday season. Things like, for example, one that happened last year. You're doing shopping on Amazon, right? You buy something from Amazon, and then next thing you know, hey, wow, look, there's this email in your mailbox from Amazon. So you click on it, right? Because, hey, you're expecting an email from Amazon because you just bought something. But it's not actually from Amazon. It's from another company. It's from usually not a company, but, you know, some gangsters in Russia or something who are trying to scam you, trying to get you to give them your username and password, your credit card, whatever. And it works because you're expecting it. You're expecting that email to arrive in your inbox, and then your guard is lowered because they're like, oh, well, you know, this is what I was expecting. And then it's only after the fact when you go, oh, wait, that didn't seem quite right. Why is Amazon suddenly very bad at spelling in English? there's also hoaxes that make their way around during the holiday season where, you know, if you forward this email to 10 people, you'll get $1 million. Let's see. There's just so many different scams and just bad stuff out there. So we just want to kind of run down the stuff that's happening.
So please join us for that. We'll also, the week before, the week of November 17th is GIS week, and we'll also be having several brown bags and also a workshop on using web mapping resources for environmental studies. So
that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, so look for all of that on the ITS site. Please go and register for the workshop if that is of interest to you, and join us for free lunch for the brown bags.
So we're always looking for feedback on the show. You can email us at itsblog@lafayette.edu.